Okay, so you're listening to this deep dive because you want to learn a little bit more about how to manage the risk when you're scaling up a chemical process, right?
Yeah, that's a really important step in the whole drug development process, moving something from the lab to the plant.
Absolutely. And there's a lot that can go wrong. And I think we both know from looking at all this OPR&D literature that people really do encounter all kinds of interesting and sometimes scary situations.
Oh yeah, you don't want to be the one calling your boss in the middle of the night because the reactor's on fire.
No, absolutely not. So the point of today is to kind of go through some of these things and talk about how we can identify the risks, but also what we can do to either prevent them from happening or have a plan B, a contingency plan, if something does go wrong. And I think a good place to start would be to just kind of highlight some of the key risks. You know, what are some of the things that can happen? Because I think a lot of people, when they think about scaling up, it's just, oh, we're just making more. But it's not just about making more, right?
No, not at all. You can get a very different reaction outcome when you move from a small scale to a large scale. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that you're changing the equipment. You know, you're going from something that's maybe a round bottom flask with like a stir bar in it to a huge reactor that has a completely different type of agitation and different ways of heating and cooling. And so the way that the heat is distributed in the reaction mixture can be very different.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that really jumped out at me when we were going through some of these OPR&D papers was just how many times people mentioned unexpected behavior, whether it was the formation of some kind of impurity that they hadn't seen before, or the reaction just not going to completion, or, and this is one that I always find kind of fascinating, things like crystallization, where at a small scale it crystallizes beautifully, but then you get to a big reactor and all of a sudden you've got this gooey mess, you know?
Yeah, and crystallization is so important for purification, right?
Yeah.
So if you can't control the crystallization, then you're going to have a really hard time getting a pure product.
Absolutely. Do you have any specific examples from OPR&D that come to mind of a situation like that?
Yeah, actually, there was one where they were making this, it was a chiral benzo something or other. I don't remember the exact name, but the interesting thing was that on a small scale, they could remove this protecting group and everything was fine. But when they tried to do it on a larger scale, the protecting group just wouldn't come off. So they were stuck with this intermediate that they couldn't convert to the final product.
And they had already presumably done all the work to develop this synthetic route, right? So to have it fail at that late stage because of something that seems so simple, I mean, removing a protecting group, you wouldn't think that that would be the make or break step.
Right. And that's the thing with scale up is that you have to look at every single step in the process and really think about how it's going to behave when you change the scale. Because even something that seems trivial can become a major problem when you're dealing with large quantities.
So it's not just the main reaction, it's every single step along the way. The workup, the purification, everything.
Exactly. You got to think about it all. And it's not just the chemistry either, it's the engineering too. Like, how are you going to mix this reaction mixture? How are you going to heat it or cool it? What kind of reactor are you going to use? All of these things can affect the outcome.
Oh, yeah. The choice of reactors is huge. You know, you've got batch reactors, continuous flow reactors, and each one has its own pros and cons. And then there are all kinds of different designs within those categories. So, yeah, I mean, it's a whole discipline in itself, just figuring out the right equipment.
It really is. And you know, another thing that we see a lot in OPR&D is problems with impurity formation during scale up. You know, maybe you get a little bit of an impurity in the lab and it's not a big deal, but when you scale up, that impurity can become a major problem because it might be toxic or might be difficult to remove.
And it seems like there are a lot of different reasons why you might see an increase in impurities when you scale up. I mean, sometimes it's just that you're starting with different raw materials or you're using a different solvent, and that can have a big impact on the purity of the product.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even something as simple as the order of addition can make a difference, you know? If you add things in a different order on a large scale than you did on a small scale, you might get different impurities.
And then there's always the issue of controlling the temperature, right? Because if you have a large reaction mixture, it can be hard to keep the temperature uniform throughout the whole thing. And if you have hot spots or cold spots, that can lead to the formation of unwanted byproducts.
Yeah. And controlling the temperature is especially important for exothermic reactions where you're generating a lot of heat. If you can't remove that heat fast enough, the reaction can get out of control, and well, you don't want to be around when that happens.
Yeah, safety is a huge concern when you're scaling up. I mean, you're dealing with much larger quantities of chemicals, so the potential consequences of an accident are much greater.
For sure. That's why it's so important to do a thorough risk assessment before you even start scaling up a process. You need to identify all the potential hazards and then figure out how you're going to mitigate them.
What does a risk assessment actually involve in the context of process chemistry?
Well, it starts with identifying the hazards. You know, what are the chemicals that you're using? What are their properties? Are they flammable? Are they toxic? Are they corrosive? And then you need to think about the process itself. What are the temperatures and pressures involved? What kind of equipment are you using? Are there any potential sources of ignition? Once you've identified the hazards, then you need to assess the risks. You know, how likely is it that something will go wrong? And if something does go wrong, what are the potential consequences?
So you're looking at both the likelihood of a problem occurring and the severity of that problem if it does occur.
Exactly. And then based on that risk assessment, you can start to develop mitigation strategies. You know, how are you going to reduce the likelihood of a problem? And if a problem does occur, how are you going to minimize the consequences?
And those mitigation strategies can take many different forms. It could be anything from changing the process to using different equipment to implementing safety procedures.
Right. And it's important to remember that there's no one-size-fits-all solution. The best mitigation strategies will depend on the specific process and the specific hazards that you're dealing with.
Absolutely. And that's why it's so important to have a good understanding of both the chemistry and the engineering involved, because you need to be able to think critically about the process and identify potential problems before they occur.
Yeah, and you need to be able to work with the engineers to come up with creative solutions because sometimes the best way to mitigate a risk is to change the process altogether.
And sometimes it's as simple as using a different solvent or changing the order of addition. But the key is to be proactive and to think about these things before you start scaling up.
Absolutely. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, as they say.
That's definitely true in the world of process chemistry. So let's talk a bit more about some of the specific strategies that can be used to mitigate risks during scale-up. You mentioned earlier that sometimes you might need to develop an alternative synthetic route. Can you give us an example of that from the OPR&D literature?
Sure. There was this one paper where they were trying to make this mild ketone, and their initial synthetic route involved isolating these liquid enones, which were really difficult to handle on a large scale. And then they had to distill these bromoketones, which are pretty nasty compounds to work with.
So they had a couple of steps in there that were inherently risky just because of the nature of the materials they were dealing with.
Exactly. So what they did was they went back to the drawing board and they came up with a completely new synthetic route that avoided those problematic intermediates altogether.
So they essentially redesigned the synthesis to make it more scalable from the get-go.
Exactly. And that's often the best approach if you can do it, because if you can design out the risk, then you don't have to worry about mitigating it later on.
And that was one of the things that I found really interesting when we were looking through these papers, was how often people would talk about designing for scalability right from the beginning. It's not just about coming up with a synthesis that works in the lab. It's about coming up with a synthesis that can be readily translated to a larger scale.
Right, and that means thinking about things like the availability and cost of raw materials, the ease of purification, the stability of the intermediates, and the overall safety of the process.
So you're essentially trying to anticipate potential problems and address them before they even arise.
Exactly. It's a lot like playing chess, you know?
Yeah.
You're trying to think several moves ahead and anticipate your opponent's moves.
That's a great analogy. And it highlights the fact that process chemistry is as much about strategy and planning as it is about technical expertise.
Absolutely. And that's why it's such a challenging and rewarding field to work in.
Definitely. So you mentioned catalyst deactivators earlier as a way to manage impurity formation. Can you elaborate on that a bit more?
Sure. So as we discussed, when you scale up a reaction, you sometimes see an increase in the formation of impurities. And one reason for that can be that the catalyst is too active.
So it's not just catalyzing the reaction you want, it's also catalyzing other side reactions that lead to impurities.
Exactly. And one way to address that is to use what's called a catalyst deactivator. This is a substance that binds to the catalyst and reduces its activity.
So you're essentially making the catalyst less efficient, but in a controlled way, so that it still catalyzes the main reaction, but is less likely to catalyze side reactions.
Exactly. And by fine-tuning the amount of catalyst deactivator that you use, you can optimize the selectivity of the reaction and minimize the formation of impurities.
It's a bit like putting a leash on a very energetic dog.
Yeah.
You still want the dog to be able to run and play, but you don't want it to run wild and get into trouble.
That's a great analogy. And there was a good example of this in one of the OPR&D papers, the one about the synthesis of Dunpezel. They were doing a hydrogenation reaction, and they found that they were getting a lot of impurities when they scaled up.
Presumably because the hydrogenation catalyst was also catalyzing other unwanted reactions.
Exactly. So what they did was they added a catalyst poison to the reaction mixture. And by carefully controlling the amount of poison that they used, they were able to suppress the formation of those impurities and get a much cleaner product.
So they were able to essentially tame the catalyst and get it to do what they wanted it to do.
Exactly. And it's a really powerful technique because it allows you to fine-tune the selectivity of a reaction without having to completely redesign the process.
So it's a very elegant solution. And it highlights the fact that process chemistry is often about finding these clever little tweaks that can make a big difference.
Absolutely. It's all about understanding the subtleties of the chemistry and finding ways to manipulate it to your advantage.
So we've talked about designing for scalability. We've talked about catalyst deactivators. What are some other strategies that can be used to mitigate risks during scale-up?
Well, one really important strategy is to use in-process controls, or IPCs.
What are those exactly?
So IPCs are basically measurements that you take during the process to monitor how things are going.
So you're essentially keeping a close eye on the reaction as it's happening.
Exactly. And the goal is to catch any problems early on before they have a chance to get out of hand.
What kind of things are you measuring?
It depends on the process, but some common things that you might measure include temperature, pressure, pH, and the concentration of reactants, products, and impurities.
And how do you actually take those measurements?
There are all sorts of different techniques that can be used, but some common ones include spectroscopy, chromatography, and tetrimetry.
And are these measurements typically done manually, or are they automated?
It depends. For some simple measurements, you might be able to do them manually. But for more complex measurements, or if you need to take measurements very frequently, it's usually best to automate the process.
And I imagine that the use of automation is becoming increasingly common in process chemistry, as it is in so many other industries.
Absolutely. Automation is a great way to improve efficiency and reduce the risk of human error.
So you mentioned that the goal of IPCs is to catch problems early on. What happens if you do detect a problem?
Well, the first thing you need to do is try to figure out what's causing the problem. And once you know what's causing the problem, you can start to think about how to fix it.
And sometimes the fix might be as simple as adjusting the temperature or the pressure.
Right. But sometimes it might be more complicated. You might need to change the solvent or the catalyst or even the entire process.
And I imagine that those decisions are not always easy to make, especially when you're under pressure to get the product out the door.
Absolutely. But it's important to remember that safety and quality always come first. So if you detect a problem, you need to take the time to investigate it properly and make sure that you're addressing the root cause.
That's good advice. So we've talked about designing for scalability. We talked about catalyst deactivators. We talked about IPCs. Are there any other important strategies for mitigating risks during scale-up?
Well, one thing that we haven't really talked about yet is contingency planning.
Right. That was one of the things on our list. What is contingency planning exactly?
So contingency planning is basically about thinking about what could go wrong and having a plan in place to deal with it.
So you're essentially preparing for the worst case scenario.
Exactly. And the goal is to minimize the impact of any problems that do occur.
What are some common things that people plan for?
Well, some common things that people plan for include equipment failures, power outages, and raw material shortages.
So you're thinking about things that are outside of your control.
Right. Because even if you do everything right, sometimes things just go wrong. And it's important to be prepared for those situations.
What are some examples of contingency plans?
Well, for example, if you're worried about an equipment failure, you might have a spare piece of equipment on hand. Or if you're worried about a power outage, you might have a backup generator.
So you're essentially creating redundancies in your system so that if one part fails, you have a backup.
Exactly. And that's really important, especially when you're dealing with a large-scale process. Because if something goes wrong, it can have a huge impact on production.
Absolutely. So contingency planning is all about being proactive and thinking about what could go wrong before it actually happens.
Exactly. And it's an important part of any risk management strategy.
So we've talked about a lot of different strategies for mitigating risks during scale-up, but I think it's important to emphasize that there's no one-size-fits-all solution. The best approach is going to depend on the specific process and the specific risks that you're facing.
Absolutely. And that's why it's so important to have a good understanding of both the chemistry and the engineering involved, because you need to be able to think critically about the process and identify potential problems before they occur.
Right. And you need to be able to work with a team of experts, including chemists, engineers, and safety professionals, to develop a comprehensive risk management plan.
Exactly. Because scaling up a chemical process is a complex undertaking, and it requires a team effort to do it safely and effectively.
And it's a really important part of the drug development process because it's the bridge between the lab and the market.
Absolutely. And if we can do it right, we can bring new medicines to patients faster and more efficiently.
And hopefully without any explosions along the way.
That would be ideal.
Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive. I've learned a lot about the challenges and the rewards of process scale-up.
It's been my pleasure.
Thanks for joining me.
Anytime.
So, for everyone listening, I hope this has given you a better understanding of the complexities of moving a chemical process from the lab to the plant. And I hope it's inspired you to think critically about the risks involved and the strategies that can be used to mitigate them. Because at the end of the day, it's all about bringing new medicines to patients safely and efficiently, and that's a goal worth striving for. So until next time, keep on learning, keep on innovating, and keep on diving deep.